first for news and the best live sport. This is BBC Five Live with Stephen Nolan.
Now, a woman whose husband was killed on a smart motorway is suing Highways England for corporate manslaughter. Jason Mercer had pulled over to swap details with another driver after a minor collision on the M1 near Sheffield. But because it was one of these so-called smart motorways, the hard shoulder was being used as an extra lane. It should have been closed after their accident, but it wasn't, and both men were then hit and killed by a lorry. A man was arrested on suspicion of causing death by dangerous driving and has been released on bail. Jason's widow, Claire, now wants a judicial review into the future of smart motorways, and she's had to become an expert on them.
Basically, there's three different types, which a lot of people don't realise. There is a variable speed smart motorway, which means that sometimes it has a hard shoulder and sometimes it doesn't. Then there's the all lane runnings smart motorway, which means it never has a hard shoulder, which is what we've got here. And unfortunately, when my husband was killed, so the hard shoulder has been completely removed. It never has one. And you're meant to use the emergency refuge areas if you can. We're told that there's all sorts of technology that's meant to make them safer. But I'm finding that, unfortunately, I have had to become a bit of a home expert in this. And I'm finding that half that technology is not there. There's a radar detection system on all smart motorways, but it can't pick up when only a few cars stop. It can only pick up when a lot of cars stop. The technology that can pick up a few cars is only on, I think it's 18% of the motorways.
So the basics around this is, I didn't even know these things existed, to be honest. So the basics around this is that the hard shoulder can disappear at times.
That's on a variable smart motorway, or you could be on an all lanes running smart motorway, which means it's never got a hard shoulder. So you have to know which type you're on and how to treat it. There's just no education around how to drive on these motorways. They've drastically changed the rules and not told people. Sometimes on some of them there's a hard shoulder, and on others there's never a hard shoulder.
I've never heard of a motorway in my life with no hard shoulder.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that I went past one every day. I don't drive. My husband drove me to and from work every day. And we didn't need to go on the motorway. He didn't often go on the motorway, especially not from that junction. It's just we had different plans that day. And unfortunately, this is how it ended up. But yes, I didn't know that stretch from the viaduct onwards was a smart motorway, an all lanes running smart motorway. I would have been more concerned about my husband using it if I'd known.
So your husband had pulled over to swap details with another driver.
Yes.
What had happened? Why did he pull over?
They'd had a minor collision. Jason and Alexandru had a minor collision, and I don't know if they didn't know they were on a smart motorway. I don't know if, unfortunately, there's going to be some things we never know. But it is your legal obligation to pull over and swap details when you have an incident. And they were doing, anything between 50 to 70 miles an hour. So they've got seconds to make a decision. So both Jason and Alexandru pulled over as far as they could in what is called lane one, which should have been the hard shoulder. They were as much up on the verge as they could get, but the vehicles were still partly in lane one. But because there's Armco barrier down the side, they couldn't get all the way out. And I now know that the nearest emergency refuge area, which is apparently where they should have headed for, is a mile away. So, you know, they couldn't see it. They didn't know about it. They knew they needed to swap details. So they pulled over and they were there for a few minutes swapping details, and then unfortunately they were hit by a HGV and killed instantly.
And you received the devastating news.
I'd already started to realise something was wrong just because he hadn't messaged me. He always kept in contact with me all through the day just to send me loving messages or just to let me know that he'd got somewhere, because he knew that I worried about things. So, yeah, I'd already started ringing both his phones, his firm, you know, and I rung the police. I rung the non-emergency number.
Because you just knew something was wrong?
Yes, yeah. I'd started messaging him when I realised at about 10, half 10 in the morning that I hadn't had any messages from him. I sent him one message saying, is everything okay? I sent him another message saying, are you all right? There's been some bad crashes on the motorway. I thought it was, I'd been hearing about it. I'd seen it referred to on social media. I'd heard it on the radio. I knew there was, I mean, it paralysed the whole of Sheffield and Rotherham and other areas, didn't it? So I knew about it. And I then sent him, you know, a GIF of a person pacing up and down anxiously waiting for news. And I still didn't hear anything. So I rung his work's mobile and it didn't do anything. I rung his personal mobile, that didn't do anything. I then rung his firm and asked if they'd heard from him. He was going to a building site, one of his firms that his firm was working for, and they hadn't heard from him, which was unusual because he would normally phone them and say, you know, we need this sending here or we need this booking, or they would have heard something from him, and they hadn't heard anything, and we all just knew that something was badly wrong when. But in my mind, I thought it was a great big crash. I thought it was one of them ones from like the 80s and 90s where there was, you know, 20, 30 cars piled up. And I thought, you know, you're just trying to reason things in your head. And I thought perhaps he's stuck in the middle of it all. And I thought there was a lot of people. And I phoned a non-emergency number. And I told them that I thought my husband was in that crash. And the operator asked me why I thought that. I relayed everything I've just told you. And she said, right, okay, give me the car reg. And I did. And she then said, she then said, I need to put this through the system and ring you back, which didn't sound right. But I was really, really panicking by this point. And
that's all she said?
She said, I need to put this through the system and ring you back. And I said, I beg your pardon, you're going to ring me back? I phoned you worried. And she says, I need to put this through the system and ring you back. And she just kept repeating the same thing, and I was really starting to panic. And then it just came into my head that my brother worked at the Northern General. So I thought, okay, I'm giving up on this person. I said, okay, fine, and hung up. I didn't fully understand what was going on, and I rang my brother, who works at the Northern General, but the reception was terrible because it's such a big building, and he wasn't expecting me to be saying what I was saying, and I was shouting and crying by this point. And I was just saying, go to A&E. I think Jason's in A&E. Go to A&E. And I was still on the phone with him, trying to make myself understood when I could see high-vis and uniforms outside my front door. And they were obviously, and I know that they were obviously already on their way. She'd matched the reg plate. She'd checked with someone. And they told her we're going to be there in a couple of minutes. And
How did they tell you, Claire?
I opened the door and I was just so shocked. I still had the phone in my hand and I just said, is he alive? And he said, let's go inside. There was one male copper and one female. And he said, let's just go inside. And I said, is he alive? And they said, let's talk inside. And I wasn't meaning to be obstructive. Your brain just switches off. And I just, I think I started to step away, but because obviously I was blocking their way. And I said, is he alive? And he just said no, and I just fell to the floor. I remember falling to the floor. I remember both of them rushing to help me, but I still had the phone in my hand, and I just said to my brother, Jason's dead. And I couldn't get my head around it. I heard the words. I mean, I'd asked the question, but I never expected no. I expected yes, but he's hurt, or, you know. I never, ever expected the answer to be no. Yeah, and I was just so shocked, and it was really odd actually, because the male police officer, he had a body cam on, and I could see myself on it, and I could see myself. It's got a screen on it. I didn't realise that you can see what it's recording, and I could see myself, and I was just stood in front of him, just going, "It's not real. It's 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 not real." And he kept trying to make me sit down. and I kept standing up and saying, it's not real. And he was trying to talk to me, and they asked me if I could describe Jason to them, because sometimes possessions get mixed up in a crash and things like that, and they didn't want to tell the wrong person. And I said, if you've got my husband, you'll know, because he was rather a distinctive-looking man. I mean, he had a red Mohican, a lot of tattoos, a lot of piercings. But they asked me to what it was tattooed around his neck. It was a tattoo saying "Truth be told." They said to me, the person we have has Jason's wallet and his driving license inside it. We think it's him. So I was sat next to my laptop like I am now, and I just pulled up a picture of Jason on it, and they said, yes, that's the person. We believe that to be the person. And then they asked me if there was somewhere they could take me, because I was in the house on my own.
How old was he, Claire?
44. And what I mean, that breaks my heart that he was 44, but the young lad with him, the young lad from the other vehicle that was killed with him, was 22.
Alexandra Mergiano, yeah. 22 mm-hmm. years of age.
Mm-hmm. It breaks my heart. His sister is just devastated. His family is just devastated.
And what we can't do is we can't go into the details around mm-hmm. this incident, because a man has been arrested on suspicion of causing death by dangerous driving.
That's
and
right.
has been released on bail. So that's an active case.
Mm-hmm.
But what we can do is ask you just the fundamental facts.
Mm-hmm.
So the fundamental facts are that your husband had pulled over and mm-hmm. this man was driving an HGV lorry. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that collided with your husband's car.
I believe it actually collided with Alexandra's van, and the van killed Jason and Alexandra. They were out on the side of the road swapping details. That's what I believe to be the case.
And what is supposed to have happened when they pulled over for this minor accident? Because you're now trying to seek a judicial review, aren't you? You want a judicial
yes.
review into the future of Smart Motorway. So
yes.
what should have happened that didn't, Claire?
Well, they should have had a hard shoulder. They should have had a hard shoulder. They should have had a relatively safe area to deal with the matter. But all they've got is we've got these token emergency rescue areas, emergency rescue area. And they're meant to be closer together than they are, and Highways England has been told to make them closer together than they are, but they haven't done it. And at the moment, I believe the average is 1.5 miles apart. And they were...
So Jason, if you do have an accident and need to pull over,
mm-hmm.
what happens if you're in between that 1.5 mile? What are you supposed to do?
Well, you're meant to get out and get as far away from your vehicle as you can. But it's different in every case. Jason and Alexandra were on a banking. That if they'd climbed much further over the Armco barrier, they'd have been going down a hill. And they couldn't go any further than where they were, much further than where they were. But in other cases, you can't go anywhere. And the advice is, if you can't get safely Vergeside, is to get in your vehicle, and this is on the government website, to get in your vehicle and put your seatbelt on. So that is basically brace for impact. How can that be safe? How is that safe? I mean, what if your mobility is affected? What if your car isn't moving? What if you've got kids with you? You know, to brace for impact. It's just, it beggars belief. And it's been sneaked in because none of us know about it. You said yourself you didn't know about it. None of us know about these things. It's been sneaked in. They've taken away the hard shoulder, and they're presenting the stats. The stats are skewed. They're offsetting dangers that no longer exist because they can't have a stat for death on the hard shoulder because the hard shoulder doesn't exist anymore. So they're hiding the other risks in that void. So the stats are skewed. They just throw stats at you, but you can make stats prove whatever you want to prove. And It's removed the hard shoulder and claiming it's safer. How on earth can it be safer?
Yeah, Highways England are saying in a statement that their thoughts are with family and friends of those involved in this incident. They say that safety is their top priority and that they will continue to evaluate all lane running schemes. They say the evidence shows that where all lane running has been introduced, there have been fewer collisions and congestion has reduced despite an increased number of vehicles using them.
I'm afraid I've got no faith in any of that, because even the Parliamentary Transport Select Committee called the data provided by Highways England disingenuous. That's a polite way of saying lies. They can't call them liars in a parliamentary document, but it's there for everyone to read. I downloaded it myself. It says their data is disingenuous.
Well, obviously, they would dispute that, wouldn't they? They said generally there are emergency areas at least every mile and a half on smart motorways with regular signs to advise drivers of the distance to the next emergency area. I would still like to know what any of us are supposed to do. Like, you're saying the government says... The government document says get into the car and put a seatbelt on.
That's on the government website. I'd make a comment about putting their family members roadside and telling them to put the seatbelts on and seeing how safe they claim it is then, but I wouldn't wish it on anyone. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. I mean, it must be absolutely terrifying. And there's four people just in this stretch of the motorway that have been killed in similar manners. Like I said, there's a 22-year-old. Jason was 44. Derek Jacobs, he was 82. It just breaks your heart to think of an 82-year-old man stranded roadside, and then the worst happens. And then before that, there was a 62-year-old woman that's not been named. It just breaks your heart. And you read this report, and safety is not the priorities in these reports. It's achieving this target and achieving this aim and improving through flow. I don't care about through throw. I care about people's lives. I just, unfortunately, you don't realise until it's too late, but I would have asked him to go a different route. Or, you know, I would have asked him if he knew what to do. I would have, I don't know. But how can...
And how, because I note that you feel that the vehicle should have been detected and the lane closed.
Yes.
How are they detected? What's supposed to happen?
There's two different sorts of radar technology available in smart motorways. All smart motorways have got, I believe it's called MIDAS, it's an acronym, and it can detect when there's a traffic jam, a big traffic jam, multiple cars or a big accident, multiple cars not moving as they should. All smart motorways have got them. Only 18% have got the more advanced version that can detect when there's just one or two vehicles. Without this, if one or two vehicles just pulls up to the side, it cannot be detected by the system. So only 18% of these smart motorways have got this. And what that does is that alerts the control room operators, and they've got a panel of cameras and TVs that they're watching. And then so basically a human is involved in the chain then, and the human can then shut the lane off.
How do they shut the lane off?
The Red Cross in the gantry above it. There's a gantry above it every...
And you're saying that only less than a fifth of our motorways have those, so the other four-fifths do not have the technology to identify if there's a car sitting there on that active lane like a sitting duck waiting for an accident to happen.
Exactly. I mean, the AA released a report this week that's saying the average time is 20 minutes. Can you imagine being stuck on a motorway, a live lane motorway, four lane motorway for 20 minutes? And in some cases, they've been up to an hour. Because the technology doesn't alert the human, and humans are fallible. And I'd love to know how many cameras and screens they're watching. I bet they've got quite a few to per operator.
So what are you wanting this judicial review to, if it goes your way, what are you wanting to change?
I want smart motorways stopped. It cannot be safer to remove the hard shoulder. It's not true. It cannot be safer. I want it stopped. It's been sneaked in by the back door. None of us were aware of it. You know, and it's, and it's, people don't realise it's only because we've had four in a relatively short time in a relatively small area that people are starting to put one and one together. And this is for all the country, and they're doubling and tripling the amount of these smart motorways. They're already, you know, telling us what they're going to convert, and there's going to be hundreds and hundreds of more miles of this.
I can hear that you're angry. You've also had to deal with losing your life partner.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason had a specific request for his funeral, didn't he?
He did.
What was that?
He wanted a Viking longboat funeral on Thriver Reservoir.
He wanted a what?
A Viking longboat funeral on Thriver Reservoir. It's where the body is laid out on a Viking longboat. And a flaming arrow is shot through the sky that lights the boat.
Did you give him one?
Unfortunately, according to my police liaison officer, these are not legal in this country. and I'm also, we were members of the local archery club, but I'm afraid I wasn't very good. He was the better one. So I think I probably would have missed the boat. But I am looking at what I can do that's closest. You can get Viking longboat ashes urns. You can, there's ways around it. I'm looking at what I can do. But yes, it's something he'd mentioned a couple of times.
So what did you do?
I had what's called a direct cremation. I honestly didn't feel that I could cope with it. It was just such a shock to me. I was in a pretty bad state and I had to be medicated, and I honestly felt that I didn't feel that Jason would have wanted a normal funeral, and I didn't think that I could cope with it, and I was worried about my family worrying about me. They've, you know, they're just all running themselves ragged looking after me at the moment, and so I had a direct cremation. It's where nobody attends, and we had a celebration of his life at Rotherham Rugby Club because he was a big rugby fan. Where we all just got together one evening and talked about him. We had lots of pictures out everywhere and all his favourite music playing, which was a very eclectic mix. And we just all... It was the first time I laughed and smiled in 4 weeks, and I didn't cry once that evening. It was really, really good. And there was one almighty crack of thunder halfway through that had everybody laughing. It was a very, very hot night. And... then in about 4 weeks' time, we are having Merce Fest at Lawns Farm in Rotherham because he loved Lawns Farm. They do their own festival and he loved that festival. So I approached them and they're being wonderful. They are hosting, they're helping us stage Merce Fest, and we're going to have an afternoon and night of his type of music.
This must all be still very raw. Only happened on the 7th of June this year.
It's 12 weeks ago.
Are you okay?
I'm better than I was. Bad day to ask that. I was awake till 5 o'clock this morning. I do sleep. I get a lot of support from his sister. She's very in a very similar state to me. And you know, we Facebook Messenger is very good. I've got a group set up, and I have to message my family regularly. Otherwise, someone comes looking for me. I was only allowed home on that basis. You know, and we just it has brought us closer. I was warned that sometimes a death can rip a family apart, but it has brought us closer. But it was a shock, and I am quite a bullshy, angry individual, and this ripped me apart. I lost a stone and a half in just shaking. I just shook constantly for 6 weeks. I just couldn't stop myself. I was just shaking, and the medication needed 5 or 6 weeks to kick in, and it's now got control of that, but I lost a stone and a half just from shaking. I am not a sensitive individual, and I just worry that how somebody more sensitive than me could get through this. And I'm scared. I am really scared that when I hear about a car crash, I'm scared that it's going to be there. Because if somebody else dies before we can get anything done about this, it's just going to feel like it's started all over again.
This is the Smart Motorway on the M1 near Sheffield, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you're going to fight and fight until you effect change, Claire. Thank you so much for sharing your story with me tonight, and we're all thinking about you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Claire.